Hello, everyone. Good evening, and welcome into this edition of the JMAC Podcast, this time live. How's everybody doing? I hope things are going well. I have been so busy, so many things going on. I can't even believe how much stuff I'm doing. I'm kind of blowing my own mind here a little bit. But a lot of it is because of your support, those of you who have become patrons of this podcast. With your monthly donation or your one-time donation, I'm doing more stuff, and this is what I've been promising to you the whole time. So thank you. I've also put Carl the Cricket on the payroll. Can you hear him? Yeah, he has set up shop outside the window, and despite my best efforts, still there, still going strong, wanting his own talk show. So I hope you don't mind a little bit of cricket in the background. Quick update on some of the things that I've got going on. So you know, at this point, I'm doing a daily update. These are pre-recorded. Facebook will tell you that they're airing live, but they are pre-recorded. And then I'm still doing the live podcasts on Tuesday and Thursday night. And I like both formats because the pre-recorded lives during the day, they're quick, about 20 minutes. I'm able to tell you what I think about the issues, and then you can get on with your life. And then I love these lives when we can get together across all these platforms and we can, have a conversation about the issues going on. So I've got that. You'll also remember I've done a couple of podcasts called Informed Utah. This is specific, Utah-specific issues, and I'm firing that bad boy up again with a vengeance. I released the first one today. You'll still find it on all the normal channels, but it'll be titled Informed Utah. Today I introduced you to Jake Hunsaker. He has announced his candidacy for Congress in the 4th District against Burgess Owens as a Republican. So I introduced you to him. If you missed that, go back to Facebook, social media, or follow the podcast. Tomorrow, I'll be talking with the co-chair of the Redistricting Commission in the state of Utah. And then I also have on the agenda for later this week, I'm going to be talking with the state epidemiologist about where we're at with COVID in the state and her guidelines for schools. And whether or not our students should wear masks. I've got a couple mayors coming up. We're going to be talking about water conservation. So all of that will come to you via the normal podcast channels, and it will be entitled Informed Utah. So I've been very busy, but with your help, and I'm very excited about all of it. So thank you. Let's see who's joining us tonight. April. April's joining us. Hey, April. Libby. Is commenting on the title that I had up there about whether or not we should continue the eviction ban. So we'll talk about that. That's an important issue. Orion also commenting on that. So I want to get to your comments. And Libby says, oh, yeah. And also, hi, Jay. Hey, Libby, how's it going? Thank you so much for joining us. So tonight on the agenda, we've got Mayor... Governor Cuomo stepping down. We knew this was going to happen. We've got whether or not the eviction ban should be continued. And I'm going to have a little bit of mixed kind of looking at both sides issue. This is based upon an email that I received from a listener last night. And also a quick question. Where would we be at without the vaccine? I think it's important to ask this question. With how bad things are getting. And I'll share with you what some of the states are facing right now and how it seems like we're all going backwards, but with so many people vaccinated, how is that possible? So lots coming up on the agenda tonight. Also, I'm starting to blog. I know, where am I getting all this time? It's crazy. I'll tell you where I'm getting it. I told you I've had a kind of a pinched nerve in my back. So I'm spending a lot of time just sitting down, and I think that my brain is going a little stir crazy, so it's been doing a lot of this stuff. So I guess, you know, if you go to jmcfarland.com, you'll see a new link there that says blog, and I'm going to share with you some of the projects and some of the personal issues and kind of my journey, things that I'm facing that we don't talk a lot about here on this program, and I've posted the first one there tonight. So check that out. Okay, let's get to, should we start off with the eviction ban? That's what it appears like a lot of you want to talk about, because that's where the comments are coming in. And I'll admit, this email that I got is really about eviction bans in general. And so this is from a listener, James. He was very kind. He sent me an email. He did disagree with me on a lot of different issues, and I sent him a long response back. And I know he's listening. And James, if you're listening tonight, thank you for taking the time to share your comments and doing so in a very respectful way. I believe that we have to look at everything going on right now in a different lens. And if we use the lens that we normally would use, we're going to cause some bigger problems. And so I'll give you some examples. Normally, and as I ran for Congress, I'm against creating more debt. I'm against government handouts. I'm against spending. But we come into the pandemic and suddenly it's the government telling you you have to shut down and social distance. It's the government shutting down the economy. And so in my opinion, the only answer in that case is for the government to step in and keep things going until we can recover. Who else is going to do that? And it's going to create debt to do that. So unfortunately, we had a mountain of debt before, which I fought against. And now we're in a situation where I supported the adding of the debt and what Trump and the Republicans and everybody else did to add to the debt. I think it was important. So that's an example of two different lenses. Normally, I don't like government controls. Normally, I don't want the government telling me what to do. But again, different lens, pandemic. I believe in the rights of businesses to require vaccinations. I believe in states' rights to issue certain mandates. But I want them to be extreme situations. And I believe the pandemic rose to those situations. So again, you see what I'm saying? Two different lenses here, okay? So many of you are talking about the extension of the eviction ban, and I'll get to that. But I want to start off by talking about the eviction ban in general based upon this email from James. So here's what James had to say. He says, there is a clear resolution to the eviction moratorium issue. Pay your rent. Renters commit to pay rent when they sign the rental agreement. In most cases, paying rent is the vaccine that prevents you from eviction. Going forward, make sure that your rental agreement has a clause that lets you suspend payment in the event of a pandemic, or purchase insurance that will cover you if that happens. We should all keep our promises. In general, under my normal lens, I agree with James. Fulfill your responsibilities. I'm a big proponent of natural consequences. I think oftentimes government tries to take away natural consequences. What motivates you to work? Hunger. What motivates you to work? Homelessness. You know, to me, sometimes it's those base needs that get people off their duff and out there working, right? But that's not perfect in every case because of disabilities, because of other issues. So the lens has to be adjustable. And to me, James kind of feels like he has a fixed lens and is not able to adjust that lens for the pandemic. Because how many people committed and signed that agreement, but then the government shut them down? And they're out of work because of the government literally shutting down the economy. Now, under normal circumstances, they would be fine. So that's the first part of the lens. But the other part that I feel like he and many other people are missing is that if we just use that lens, then we're going to make the problem much worse for everybody. So oftentimes you have to do things that would go against your kind of core principle to make sure that everybody isn't taken down with the ship. And so in order to do this, we have to play the and then what game, okay? So here's how this works, okay? In James' world, there's no eviction ban, okay? There's no foreclosure ban. So let's play the and then what game, okay? Millions and millions and millions and millions of people would have been kicked out of their homes. They would have been foreclosed on, okay? Now, what does that do to the economy? What does that do to you? What does that do to your home values? Can you imagine? Right now, your home value is based upon the demand, the supply and demand for homes. And if suddenly millions and millions of homes are foreclosed on and millions of people are evicted and there's no people to come in and take those places, because it's not like you evict 9 million people and there's 9 million others just sitting out there waiting to come in. What happens? Well, we saw an example of this in 08 when suddenly the market is flooded with foreclosed properties and rent landlords that can't rent out their properties. What happens to all of us? The real estate market crashes. You go from having property value, from having equity, to being underwater. And then that makes the crisis worse. Not only that, banks lay off. Not only that, monies aren't going into the economy. Plus, okay, the number's like 9 million or something like that. What does your city do? What does your state do with hundreds of thousands, millions of people who are homeless? Who's going to feed them? You know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. It's going to be a burden put on the state and the federal government. And now let's talk about getting them off the streets. Can you imagine the amount of dollars, federal and local dollars, that would have to be spent to get millions and millions of people back into their rentals or back into their mortgages? So what happens is because you have one lens and you're so focused on that, you're actually going to make the problem 10 times worse for everybody. And you're going to make it more costly for everybody. So this is one of those cases where, yeah, I'm a conservative. Yeah, I believe in personal responsibility. Yeah, I believe that the government has been facilitating a lack of personal responsibility with many of their government programs. But a pandemic is like no other scenario. And if we don't manage it properly, we could send the entire country into a tailspin clinging to this idea. You signed up to pay the rent. You will pay the rent or you will be homeless. You see what I'm saying? This is what we seem to miss so often now in our society, is that oftentimes clinging to that principle can sink you. And so I believe you have to be able to adjust. And I don't mean adjust for the long term. And I think that's what a lot of people have a fear of. They have a fear that, once the program is in place, we'll never carve it back. And I have that fear too, because that's reality, right? Once Congress takes it over, once the government's got their claws in there, they never give it back. And that's a legitimate fear, and I understand that. But just playing that and then what game, can you imagine millions and millions and millions of homeless people? Millions and millions of empty apartments and foreclosed homes? The government had to step in. It had to. Unless I'm missing some other solution that you can come up with, okay? But now, we talked about this with the additional unemployment benefit. Remember, that's something that I also supported. Normally, in my normal lens, hey, you know, I want natural consequences to kick in. You know, I don't want it to be easy to live off the government. I want it to be easier to go to work. But again, under this same lens, you have to adjust, right? You have to adjust. But now, has it gone too far? And this is a difficult question because we're seeing a hiring crisis across the country. There are jobs available, same jobs that were available before, and people are staying home. How are they staying home? Why are they staying home? Well, it could be that there are two reasons why. First of all, they're not going to get kicked out, and they're getting a check for the government. Does this fit everybody's scenario? No, it doesn't. And in fact, Utah, which we have a pretty low unemployment rate, but Utah refused the extra unemployment benefit, and we haven't seen any change in the hiring. And the employers I talk to in this country will tell you the hiring crisis is alive and well here, even though, you know, it's according to what we're used to in our numbers, right? So at what point do you cut off the spigot, so to speak, and send people back? And are we at that point? You have to find a delicate balance here, and I'm not sure how to find it. And of course, with this eviction ban, there was some constitutionality questions. And even President Biden said, I want them to do this, but I don't know that it's constitutional. And if it gets challenged in the court, it might turn around to bite us, because it was constitutional when Congress did it and not constitutional when an agency just decides to do it. So we'll have to wait and see. Let me put it this way. I thought we were coming out of the pandemic and it would be time to get back to, normal levels of unemployment and time to get back to the eviction ban or get rid of the eviction ban. But my friends, we're in many places. The pandemic is worse now than it was before. And people who thought they'd be going back to certain jobs are not. So maybe 2 months ago you asked me, is it time? I'm like, yeah, it's time. Man, things have changed in a few months. So I don't know. I don't know if it's time now. Let's see. Let's get to some of your comments. So I hope that it makes sense. The ability to look through different lenses is so important. Let's see. Libby says, continuing the ban puts people more in debt to their landlords and keeps landlords from making their living. Yes, it does. It absolutely does. The alternative, but you have to ask yourself, what is the alternative? The alternative is now there's nobody, because again, if we had a huge population of people wanting to get in and ready to move in and pay those bills, that would be one thing. But when you talk in the numbers of millions, you're talking about foreclosed homes, the market flooded with foreclosed properties, the rental market flooded with empty units, and now the landlord is still not paying their bills, right? Now, in some cases, there are renters waiting to go into the wings. But I personally think that the consequences to the overall economy and to my property values and everybody else's is worth the eviction bans that we've had so far. Orion says, no, the eviction ban should not continue. People have the right to fail as much as they have the right to succeed. Again, normally, I agree, right to fail, right to succeed. But man, when it's your government that is the one shutting you down, that's not normal. And we need to stop acting like the pandemic is normal operating procedures. It's just not normal. So normally, Orion, and actually I'm surprised to hear you say that, because you're normally a little bit more on the left with things. But I agree with you. People need the right to fail. And that's a great motivator. But again, this is different times. David says the extending of the eviction ban is just delaying the inevitable. And when it eventually ends, the tenants will just have to pay more than before. It doesn't work. Well, it has worked because our property values are still going well. We don't have millions of people on the streets. So I guess it depends on what your definition of work, of it working is. There will come a day of reckoning, right? But hopefully that is a situation where people are employed again and they can get back and make those payments. If we did just put it off until the end, then let me tell you, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that I've read a lot of stories every day of people who believe that we are on the precipice of another 08, if not worse. Because when the eviction ban ends or whatever, if it all just goes into free fall, we'll see what will happen if that's the case. I think it's been good policy up until now. Chris, he says, I'd love to see rental assistance programs to help those who fall into very specific groups. People suffering from long-haul COVID, those at very high risk, single parents who can't send their at-risk child to school. A lot of research has been done on this, and Chris, I think that you would agree with me that oftentimes the cost to the taxpayer is much higher when you don't have those programs, because you end up having to help those people out of worse scenarios. So, I used to be anti-safety net, anti-social program 100%. Now I just want programs that work. If they will work, then yeah, let's do them. So often the government just likes to write checks and they end up, instead of helping you get out of the problem, they make you comfortable in your problem. And so, yeah, you didn't end up homeless, but you also didn't end up getting a job. And so that's where good, so for me, it's not about do we have the program or don't. If we can find a viable program, I will support it because I do believe the long-term benefits could outweigh the detractors without those programs. Michael says, common sense lenses. Yes, that's what we all need. You know, like when you go to the optometrist and he goes, how about now? How can you see now? Let's see. Orion, for capitalism to truly work, it needs to hit that brick wall. It needs to fail and have market crashes or housing crashes from time to time. That low point is the system finding balance again in normal circumstances, Orion. Yes. Totally agree with you. Not when it's the government shutting you down. See, this through all, you cannot play market forces will save the day in the middle of a global pandemic. Because market forces don't exist anymore in the same way. So that's where I depart. We gotta be wise enough to say, this is different. But again, if we give this authority to the government now, will we ever be able to carve it back, right? Let's see, this is Ronald. Hey, Ronald, long comment here, Ronald. Jay, this administration has been touting the availability of jobs for the last 3 months. People could have found a job by now. The renters have known that July 31st was the end of the moratorium. Those renters should have been in contact with the landlords before that date. Let's put it back up. There has been government money available that hasn't been applied or distributed. The government has made it either difficult for renters or landlords to apply or they hit it on purpose. Yeah, Ronald, I think that's all true. And that's why I'm wanting to say it's time to end the moratorium. But then I look with what's going on with COVID and I'm like, okay, I'm not sure now. I've already told you that I thought it was time to end the additional unemployment benefit, and I agreed with the state of Utah for not taking that on. I'm a little bit worried with the Delta variant, and I'm worried about Delta Plus. I shared this with you in a JMAC update the other day. Have you heard about the Delta Plus? It's not a SkyMiles group. It's another variant that's out there. So I'm a little bit worried about that. Let's see. Orion says, where'd you go, Orion? Okay, you're already at the brink of another recession because we have overvalued equities in just about everything from stocks to real estate. Right now, real estate is ridiculously overpriced and out of reach of many buyers. We need more buyers and less renters. So having the market crash would be a good thing here. I wouldn't use, let's not use the word crash, Orion. Let's say correction. You know, a correction would be good. I don't want crash. I don't think we need that. This is Libby. Libby says the ban was necessary, but I'm not sure continuing it is. Of course, I have the Utah lands and things are actually good here. I think you're right on, Libby. I think you're right on. So really the question is now, is it time? I think that when you see people not going to accept work that they normally would have accepted, that's an indicator that something is off, right? And so I talked about us not having traditional market forces right now. The government has gotten involved, and so something is off. And oftentimes we put in programs with the best of intentions, but we don't understand the unintended consequences. We're probably experiencing those unintended consequences now. Chris says, I think what makes this surge in cases different is people can get vaccinated and go to work. Now, that's a good point. We're back to personal choice, right? But are they not going back to work because of they're afraid of COVID? Are they, you know, I've shared with you some research. And not everybody has said that they're just kicking it at home because they can. I do agree with what Orion and many of you said. If it gets tough enough for people, I think they're going to have to go back to work. And so continuing to allow them to be comfortable is not going to help that problem. Orion says, call it a 50% correction. 50% still too high for me, man. It's still too high. Can we meet in the middle? Orion, can we meet in the middle? That's what I would like to do. Anyway, I just thought it was important that we still remind ourselves that this was not normal. And it sounds like most of us agree it's time to taper this thing off. That James was kind of acting like, oh, so what if we're in a pandemic? You signed a rental agreement, so what? So what if the government's shutting down your existence? So what if they're making you stay home? You sign an agreement, you have to be ready. Well, you know, that's the libertarian in me used to be that guy. I used to spout exactly that. I've changed, and I think that for the better good of everybody involved, I think that we made the right choices up till now. But now we've got to make some hard choices. All right, any other comments on that? I would love them. Let's see. Talking about going... Oh, well, first let's do this. Let's go to the interwebs here, and let me pull this article up on the screen. I never asked you if you guys like... If you like seeing the articles before I just read them. But now you see the text on the screen. Let me know if you like that. I'll keep doing it. I even highlight it for you like that. Oh, that needs to be a little bit bigger. If you want me to keep doing this, or if you would rather just look at my mug as I read it to you, you decide. Sorry, I had to cough there. So this was not a surprise to me, but somebody asked me a question today, and I thought it was an interesting question, and I've thought about it throughout this afternoon, and I thought I would share it with you. Andrew Cuomo announced his resignation today over a barrage of sexual harassment allegations in a fall from grace. A year after he was widely hailed nationally for his detailed daily briefings and leadership during some of the darkest days of the COVID-19 pandemic. This is from the AP. The 63-year-old Democrat emphatically denied intentionally mistreating women and called the pressure for his ouster politically motivated, but he said that fighting back in this too hot political climate would subject the state to months of turmoil. I love how he's stepping down for the good of the state. I love that phrase that he emphatically denied intentionally mistreating women. I don't think he believes he mistreated women. I don't think he understands how women should be treated. So, of course, he's going to deny mistreating women. He doesn't understand. Obviously, if you read the 165 reports, you know this guy doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. And if you haven't read the report, and I don't expect you to, but I did, and I did a podcast a few, was it, I guess it was early last week where I read through the whole report, and I shared with you my conclusion that he absolutely sexually harassed these women and that he has a criminal liability and that I believe there would be criminal charges. And that this is not a he said, she said situation. There are mountains of corroborating evidence and text messages and paper trails and complaints. And so I considered, once I read that report, I considered him to be cooked and talking about it being politically motivated. Well, this has all been, these investigations and everybody, these are all Democrats. And the question that was asked to me today was, I wrote it down, why can't the GOP deal with Trump the way the Dems dealt with Cuomo? I'll let you discuss. One more time. Why can't the GOP deal with Trump the way Dems dealt with Cuomo? So Biden asking for his resignation and members of the state legislature still talking about impeachment. In fact, Republicans are saying, of course, Republicans are saying this. Republicans exulted in Cuomo's departure, but still urged impeachment, which could prevent him from running for office again. They said this resignation is simply an attempt to avoid real accountability. That's the state GOP chair, Nick Langworthy. So again, what are your thoughts? Why can't the GOP deal with Trump the way Dems dealt with Cuomo? I've been thinking about this all day. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? I don't want to jump the gun, but I know some of you are typing in the comment line, so I feel like I should wait. It's one of you who's listening that actually asked the question. And so I'm not going to share with you who it is. You can fess up if you want, if you were the one who asked the question. And I'm going to tell you why. And I believe I know exactly why. And part of me wants to say it's refreshing to see a political party hold their own accountable. But I don't know that that's really what's happening here. April says, excellent question. So again, the question, why can't the GOP deal with Trump the way Dems dealt with Cuomo? Let's see. Orion says Trump is part of a personality cult, so it's not really the same thing. People sucked into Trump are incapable of recognizing the situation they are in. I again, you know me. If you participate in this broadcast at all, if you listen to my congressional campaign, if you listen to me on KSL News Radio, you know that one of my biggest problems is when we don't hold our own accountable to the same standards that we hold the other side to. And that we typically live in a world now where what we say actually is they did bad, so we're going to do worse. But then we're going to try and hold them accountable for the bad that they do while explaining away what we do. And it's a recipe for constantly getting worse. And I think that's what we've seen for decades now. We're trying to outworse the other side. And I shared this with you the other night because the Democrats impeached Trump and they cited what they believed to be high crimes and misdemeanors. Now Republicans are saying we're going to impeach Biden because of dereliction of duty, which is not an impeachable offense. That's what elections are for. But we're going to outworse them instead of saying we didn't think that Trump should have been impeached. And so we're going to be sure to hold ourselves to that same high standard when it comes to your guy. No, what we do is we're going to be worse, man. There's no clinging to principle left in the party system. So when you come out, when you see Democrats saying they want Cuomo to resign, you're like, wow, that's refreshing. Well, here's what I believe. Chris is raising his hand. It was Chris Larson who asked me the question earlier today. I love the little emoticon there of you raising your hand, Chris. That's awesome. And again, the question, why can't the GOP deal with Trump the way Dems dealt with Cuomo? Look, I think that there is a defining difference between the allegations. And that difference is evidence. I do think that Democrats came out sooner and they said things like, if these are true, he needs to step down. Whereas if it was just an allegation on the other side of the aisle, they would say they need to step down. But on our side of the aisle, we say if it's true, then they need to step down. With the allegations against Trump, you had, and I looked into and researched a lot of those allegations. Unfortunately, so many of them had happened so long ago, or there wasn't any corroborating evidence that it really was a he said, she said situation. And there's a lot of people who would say, well, there were so many of them, then it has to be true. I'm not going to play that game. In today's world of politics, I'm not going to play that game. I want to believe the accuser, but I'm also very worried about the power of the accusation in our society. And so we always have to, in my opinion, approach every scenario as though both sides are innocent or believable until there's evidence to support otherwise. And if we let our politics say, well, they're a Democrat, so of course I'm going to believe it because I'm a Republican, or the other way around, I think that we have to have a standard still in the court of public opinion. And so I looked at all of those allegations and saw that there was a lot of he said, she said, but not a lot to back it up. Orion's bringing up Stormy Daniels. Stormy Daniels was a situation where she was not alleging sexual abuse. She was alleging an affair and she was paid off, if I remember that right. Am I remembering that right? So that's a situation where it's not a sexual assault allegation. Is it a situation where Republicans should have said, hey, this is a violation? I thought it was a violation of law. I thought it was a payment in kind during a campaign. And so I spoke out against it. But, you know, most Republicans look past it. I'm speaking, Orion, specifically about the allegations. I'm comparing two situations. 11 women come out and they accuse Governor Cuomo of sexual harassment. How many? 11, 12, 13 women came out and accused Trump of sexual harassment. I'm comparing those two scenarios. And the suggestion has been made that the Democrats handled it better than the Republicans did. That's what I'm doing. So Chris is asking, where was the moral outrage with Stormy Daniels? Well, moral outrage is a partisan issue right now. It's not principled outrage. It's not moral outrage. It's partisan outrage, right? And, you know, I think that in several cases, the Democrats have done a better job with this recently. And it's because they kind of saw the Me Too movement and they got ahead of it. So I do give Democrats credit. Who was the, why can't I think of him? Al Franken. I thought that was another place where they held their own accountable. I think in general, the Democrats are further ahead on the Me Too movement. And so we've seen some examples of that. But comparing the two situations, there's one glaring difference between the two situations. And that glaring difference is why it eventually came to the point with Cuomo where they were demanding a resignation. And I don't think they would have come to the demand of resignation if that point hadn't been achieved. What is that point that that you think that I'm talking about? Blake says Trump was being smeared by a fake Russian document. The smear job was so obvious it turned his slight enemies into Trump defenders. Again, I'm sticking with the allegations from the women who accused Trump of sexual harassment over the years and the women who accused Cuomo. I don't want to rehash the Russian document and all of that stuff. I covered all that stuff in great detail. But right now you have a prominent Democrat accused by 11 women. We had a prominent Republican accused by as many women. Why is it that on one side there were demands for resignation and on the other side it was like, meh, no big deal. What do you think? Let's see. David says, I think one of the evidence that might be against Trump is that a lot of these allegations I notice seem to be quite consistent with each other. I don't know how much validity that has in the rule of law, but it's something I noticed. I noticed that too. All kind of the same story, same language. Look, I'll be honest with you. I think Trump did those things. That's just my personal opinion. In the court of public opinion, though, could I come out and say he needs to be held accountable or he needs to resign? I don't know. This is Orion Temple Taggart is a sister of someone I know that I've heard her account secondhand. She was assaulted by Trump. I believe her. But like you said, that was 20 years ago. Makes it very difficult, right? Makes it very difficult. And so I can see Republicans saying, you know, yeah, there's a lot of allegations, but people just hate this guy and this is all political and there's not any evidence to support it. And I can see Democrats doing the same thing. And by the way, Democrats, a lot of Democrats did in making the statement, if the allegations are true, he should step down. What does that statement say? That says we don't believe the women. We don't disbelieve the women. It wasn't enough for them that that substantial amount of women had come forward. They said, if true, he should step down. That is, in a way, a defense of Cuomo. So for me, the defining difference and the reason why Biden finally came out and said he has to step down and why Democrats en masse started calling for impeachment is one word, evidence. Preponderance of evidence. Okay, that's three words. That 165-page report is damning because it takes it so far out of the realm of he said, she said. In every situation, in fact, I'm trying to think back with what I read, were there situations that didn't have some type of corroboration? And maybe one, maybe two. But, I mean, clear examples. So, the governor engages in a conversation with an employee about the size of his hands and says, hey, what are, says to her, hey, what are people saying about the size of my hands? What do you think about the size of my hands? I mean, you know, it's just like, it's like a sitcom almost. And that individual told other people about the conversation. Other conversations where he was asking employees about their sex lives. Are you faithful? Have you ever cheated? How old is too old for you? Are you monogamous? All of these things. Those people would tweet their mom, not tweet, text their mom and say, Mom, you won't believe this conversation I had with the governor today. They would text coworkers. They would commiserate with other coworkers and say, oh yeah, well, this happened to me. And so those are all things that you look for. Well, when it happened, did they tell somebody? Yeah, they did. Most of them did. Were some of these things witnessed by other coworkers? Yeah, they were. Did they file complaints to supervisors? Yeah, they did. That is the one thing when I walked away, because I told you, I try to go into everything, regardless of party affiliation. I try to go into everything and try and assess for myself at some, like I'm on the jury and I'm coming in fresh. And I was blown away by the thoroughness of that document and how much evidence there is. He is in trouble. He hasn't just lost his job. He's going to face criminal charges. And he's going to face a bunch of lawsuits. There are mountains of evidence. And that's, to me, why there is a marked difference between how Trump was treated by Republicans and how Cuomo is being treated by the Democrats. But I do concede that as of late, Democrats have handled this much better. They've caught on faster to me. Blake wants to bring up Clinton, Dems defending Clinton to death. Don't forget that. It's a personality thing. Trump has that personality too. I don't know that it was – I think it was a party thing. Not a personality thing. And what this is what has always struck me about that is, so during Clinton, the Democrats defended him and Republicans were indignant and impeached and talked about higher standards. But what have we done with our standards? What have we excused away with our standards? Did we get better? This is a crazy thing about politics. Did we get more resolute in our principles? Or did we abandon them because they got away with it? And that's what's happened. We abandoned them because the Democrats got away with it. So clearly it doesn't matter. So we can do the same thing too. So were we standing on principle or were we standing on party? That's what's amazing to me about the evolution of these type of allegations within the two parties. Orion, do you think if the same type of allegation and situation hit Trump, it would have made any difference? If he was assaulting White House interns, would the GOP have really held him accountable? There comes a point, you know, Trump is Teflon Don. I mean, he's right. He could have shot somebody. So could it have risen to that level? If there was this much evidence and this many people willing to come forward, I don't think even he could weather that storm. If there was this much corroborating evidence, I think, and I may be completely wrong, but this is so much evidence. I mean, if I'm Cuomo, I don't even forget the trial. Let's talk plea deal, you know, at this point. Blake says, were these Cuomo crimes occurring while he was in office? Yes. Yes, all of them. And that should make a difference as well. Yeah. And they're all recent. And that's one of the other reasons. With Trump, so many of them were in the past. And so you didn't have that corroboration, where with Cuomo, these are all recent and people have, they have text messages. And so the investigators, they have those text messages. They have all of that that documentation. Libby says they did, but now they don't. Yeah, I think you're talking about how they did. They wanted those higher standards with Clinton, but now they don't. Let's see. Orion says they were always there. A lot of them recent, like within the past year. Libby says, yep, party, not principle. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear to me. And I think that the hand of Democrats was forced. But I do think when you look back at some of the recent things, Democrats have held their own to a higher standard. Let's see. Blake says Mark Sanford was kicked out. I forgot about Mark Sanford. I think the bottom line for all of us is we have to ask ourselves, as we decide in the court of public opinion how we view these people, what type of response we want from these people, are we falling into that same trap? And are we demanding the highest standards from those on the other side of the aisle, but on our side, just lowering the bar? Or my favorite one nowadays is to just say, He started it. I mean, that's my favorite one. The Democrats did this. So when you point out something that the Republicans are doing wrong and the answer is the Democrats did this, you're admitting that our side is doing it wrong and you're excusing it away with the bad behavior of the other side, which you criticized when they did it. If you didn't criticize it when they did it and you celebrated it, then go ahead and do it. But you criticized it when they did it. And now it's happening on your side and you're saying they did it first. It's remarkable. It's, I've always said it's like when you walk into a room and your two kids are fighting and they both say, he started it. You know. Orion says, Mark Sanford didn't have the luxury of a personality cult defending him. I don't think, you know, a lot of people want to assign this a personality cult. I also think that this is the evolution of the two-party system over the last. And I think the personality cult was given rise because of this constant two-party system and this thing, this back and forth that we've been doing for years. So I think this has been a long time coming. And Trump may have been the personification of or the culmination of all of it coming together. This has been around for a long time. Many of you have pointed that out. A lot of these people you're bringing up are well before Trump. Libby says, people think I am a Democrat because I'm so hard on my party. Well, you know, I get that all the time, you know. And if people will ask me, how come you spend so much time talking about the Republicans? And I'm like, because they're me. They're us. And I think that that's what we should do. We should choose people of the highest standards. If we have standards. But I've really kind of learned over the last year or two, I don't know that we have standards. Our only standard is that we win. All these other things that we claim are principles and guiding things or whatever, no, those are all out the door. All that matters is we win. It's about power. That's what it's about. All right. So great discussion, great comments. Just my two cents there. A couple of other things that I wanted to share with you. And I had this question. I had it on the slide at the beginning. How long have we been going? 55 minutes. Okay. What would this country look like right now if we didn't have the vaccine? I think that it's important to ask this question because it should give us some insight into how we should be handling things, should give us some gratitude for what we have and for decisions that have been made by government, and appreciation for things Trump did, also concerns about things he did. Can you imagine? I just want you to imagine the Delta variant working its way through this country without the vaccine. This would be of unbelievable proportions. And so I'll give you some examples of what's going on here. So this is DFW. I still follow Texas news. They're still in my news feed because I spent 5 years there and I still love it there. So this is Governor Greg Abbott today has announced a series of actions the state is taking to mitigate the recent rise in COVID-19 cases in Texas. The Texas Department of State Health Services will be utilizing staffing agencies to provide medical personnel from out of state to Texas healthcare facilities to assist in COVID-19 operations. I will remind you, this is a state that is refusing to go back on any type of mask mandates. Governor Abbott has also sent a letter to the Texas Hospital Association asking hospitals to voluntarily postpone elective medical procedures for which a delay will not result in loss of life or the deterioration of a patient's condition in order to increase hospital capacity for COVID-19 patients. You're seeing the same thing in Florida. You're seeing it in California. Can you imagine where we would be? I mean, this is with what, 70% of the people vaccinated? This is frightening. It is frightening for me. It's one of those things where I am so grateful for science and for what the government did. And I mean, for all of those things. But part of me is living in fear that the next variant comes along because we're not stomping this out soon enough because people are refusing to get vaccinated or because third world countries are not being vaccinated. And this thing comes back with such a vengeance like we have never seen. If this COVID came through initially with the level of contagion that the Delta variant has, we would be having a very different conversation right now. This is California hospitals. Officials across California are sounding new alarms about a significant spike in COVID-19 hospitalizations amid a surge fueled by the Delta variant of the coronavirus. This is the good part. While the numbers are still below the levels seen during the fall and winter, the rise is still alarming for healthcare systems weary and worn thin after almost a year and a half of the pandemic's front lines. Many of the state's most populous areas have seen their COVID-19 hospitalizations double over the span of a few weeks. And overall, California has seen its total number of hospitalized coronavirus patients swell from 2,900 on July 25th to 5,900 as of Sunday. My normal news feed that I get all my normal sources from. But I also have a news alert set up just for COVID. This is with, I wonder if I should have had this. You know, I think of so many things on the spot when I'm live. And it's just not the best way to do a show. But it's the way my mind works when the adrenaline is going and things like that. I want to see... Let's see if it's here. Just so you can see it. Let me see if I can bring this up. Let's see if my... I haven't showed you any emails yet, so this will be a first-time attempt. So bear with me. Let's see here. Mail. And I'm going to... Let's see. Oh, there you go. Look at that. Okay, so Google alerts for COVID. So this is just today. You can just see island businesses responding to the latest COVID-19 surge. McLean County reports 242nd COVID death. Active caseloads rise. That is WGLAT. That's Illinois. Gianforte on COVID upsurge. Consider vaccinating, but no mandates. October's Island Fair canceled over COVID concerns. Doctor up for Idaho Health Board spot calls COVID-19 vaccine needle rape. Great. COVID vaccines to be required for military under new U.S. plan. Marble Falls Hospital for students and parents overrun. Governor Abbott takes action to mitigate. Weekend COVID report, 101 new cases. Paying tribute to friends lost to COVID. You just look here and what you see, there you go. Hospitalizations and deaths in Saskatchewan are overwhelmingly the unvaccinated. Hospitals at critical capacity with COVID cases in Montgomery County. This is what the majority of my COVID feed is nowadays. It's overwhelmed, 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 going backwards, going backwards, going backwards. And it's just a reminder that if we don't get the majority of us vaccinated, I think we're risking something much worse. I really do. So I hope that you'll consider it if you haven't. And if you can, and work with your doctor and your medical professional. This is Orion. The Delta variant killed some 4 million Indians. That's not official deaths. That's suspected deaths, as they had 4 million more deaths above their normal background death rate. Yeah, we actually talked about that in the podcast. You're talking about excess death rates. They had 4 million deaths more than they had projected for the year. They'll have obviously have to go back and find out. But every country has excess death rates than their normal averages because of this thing. So just a reminder there. That's all. Just a reminder. Hey, that's really all I had planned for you. Remember, watch for the Informed Utah podcast that I'm doing. It'll come through on the normal channels, normal feeds. You'll get notified just like you would normally. I did one today with congressional candidate Jake Hunsaker, who is running against Burgess Owens in the 4th District. I introduced you to him. Tomorrow, I'll be talking with the co-chair of the Redistricting Commission in the state of Utah. You know that I was in favor of the Redistricting Committee, so he'll talk to us about how that works. I'll also be talking with the state epidemiologist regarding her recommendations for Utah schools and where we're at in the state of Utah. So all of that coming up, lots of great things on Informed Utah. I'm very excited to bring Utah-centric information to you. Haven't been able to do that for a while. And it's all because of those of you who are supporting this podcast by becoming a patron, monthly patron, or a one-time patron. Just go ahead and take a picture of that flow code or go to jmcfarland.com and help me pay my bills so that I can bring this to you on a regular basis. You guys are awesome. I will let you get back to bed and join me on Thursday night again, where we'll do this again live, and watch tomorrow for Informed Utah and other national updates. Lots going on, everybody. Have a wonderful night. Say goodnight to Carl the Cricket. Yeah, he's still going. Remember, I put him on the payroll. Might as well. If you can't beat him, join him. Everybody, good night.